Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I have a little bit of a sore throat this morning, so I won't be able to get as excited as I did 2 weeks ago. Huh? Yesterday I was excited, but 2 weeks ago.
Oh, boy. What
2 weeks ago. I will very briefly review the main ideas that we expressed in the shiur that I said 2 weeks ago, and we're going to continue on. We discussed basically the idea that Jews enter Eretz Yisrael three times. In other words, we, in our generation, are able to talk about the third entry of Jews into Eretz Yisrael. Jews came in the days of Yahushua. After the Babylonian exile, they returned with, as we will see, Zerubbabel, Ezra, Nehemiah. There are going to be a number of aliyot. There are going to be a number of waves of Olim that are going to come from Babel to Eretz Yisrael. And then, of course, there is the return of Jews to Eretz Yisrael in our own time. The Rambam makes it very clear that the sanctity of the land, I just want to make sure that you remember what we said, the sanctity of the land in the days of Yahushua was of a temporary nature, because Yahushua sanctified the land through conquest, and the conquest of Yahushua was cancelled out ultimately by Babel's conquest of Eretz Yisrael. However, the Rambam says that when Ezra came to Eretz Yisrael, Ezra did not conquer the land, he did not sanctify it by virtue of conquest, but he sanctified it by virtue of settlement. And since it is as a result of settlement, that sanctity, Kedusha Shinia, the second sanctification of the land, remains into eternity for all time. So all of the Mefarshim of the Rambam want to understand, well, but there was a second destruction, Jews were dispersed, Jews were again exiled, why isn't the second sanctity of Eretz Yisrael also removed as a result of the fact that there was a destruction of a second Beit HaMikdash and Jews went out throughout the entire world? That's the big question. I gave three answers. Two were of Soloveitchik and one was gold. One answer that Rav Soloveitchik says is the following. There is another statement of the Rambam. The Rambam says that when Eretz Yisrael was conquered by Babylon and Jews were sent off into exile, it was the sanctity of the land as a whole that came to an end. Kedushat Haaretz. And when we talk about Kedushat Haaretz, I'm getting excited already again. When we talk about Kedushat Haaretz, we're not talking about the innate sanctity of Eretz Yisrael that it has from the moment of creation, or certainly from the moment that Avraham walked into this land. We are talking about a very special Kedusha that makes the land obligated in all of the mitzvot of Truma, Meiser, and Shemitah. For it to become sanctified, that those mitzvahs should become obligatory, there has to be an act of sanctifying it, and we are the ones who do it in the days of Ezra through conquest, and in the days of Yahushua. Keep reminding me to have my name straight. In the days of Yahushua through conquest, in the days of Ezra through settlement. Says the Rambam, that's true with regard to the sanctity of the land as a whole. But the sanctity of the Beit HaMikdash and Yerushalayim is different. the Bet HaMikdash and Yerushalayim became holy as a result of the fact that we Jews brought down the divine presence. David and Shlomo built the Bet HaMikdash. They brought the divine presence down upon Yerushalayim. The divine presence, the Rambam says, Shechina eino betela. Nobody removes the divine presence from Eretz Yisrael. So the sanctity of the Bet HaMikdash and Yerushalayim is because of the divine presence. From the moment that it became holy in the days of David and Shlomo, it remained holy for all time. So we see that there's a difference between Eretz Yisrael as a whole and Bet HaMikdash and Yerushalayim. Says the Rambam in answer to that question, the Rambam says in that self same halacha where he tells us that the divine presence is never removed, he quotes a pasuk in Parashat Bechukotai that says, "Vahashimoti et migdashechem, I will make desolate your holy places," from which the Gemara learns, "Afal pisher shomimin, though they are desolate, v'kedushatam hein omdim, they remain holy though they are desolate." Historically, there was a great difference between the entrance of Yahushua into Eretz Yisrael and the entrance of Ezra. Yahushua entered the land. He conquered first the Emek HaYarden, Jordan Valley. From there he went to the south. From the south he moved across to the west. From the west he moved upward along the entire coast, conquered the north of Eretz Israel. When was Yerushalayim finally conquered? Days of David, 350 years later. It took 350 years from the time of Yahushua until Jews came to Eretz Israel. Yahushua started at the periphery until 350 years later David came to the epicenter of sanctity, which is Yerushalayim. When Ezra came to Eretz Israel, where did he go? Did he go to the periphery? No, he came directly to Yerushalayim. Which means that what Ezra is doing is, he is taking the sanctity of Yerushalayim and he is spreading it outward. The sanctity of Yerushalayim, the Rambam had said, is eternal. The sanctity of Yerushalayim is eternal. So therefore, what the Rambam means when he says Ezra conquered, Yahushua conquered the land, and Ezra settled it, and the settlement of Ezra, that sanctity is never removed from the land, because from where did that settlement begin? The settlement began from Yerushalayim, and from there, like the spokes of a wheel, Jews moved out into the suburbs, into the further areas of Eretz Yisrael. That was one pshat. Second pshat that the Rav says is, in order to sanctify Eretz Yisrael, there is an instrument of sanctity. How do you make it holy? How did Yahushua make the land holy? Says the Rav, it was the Aron, the Ark. How did they enter Eretz Yisrael? Because the Kohanim holding the Ark stood in the Jordan, and the water split, and Klal Yisrael crossed. How was the first act of conquest done? Jews marched for 7 days around Yericho, and they marched behind the Aron, and on the last day they blew the trumpets, but it was the Aron, the Ark, that brought the walls of Jericho tumbling down. As far as the sanctity that is brought by virtue of the Ark, there are two ways in which the ark sanctifies. And those two ways are expressed in two psukim that we all know. Vayihi bin soah ha'aron, and came to pass when the ark journeyed, vayomer Moshe, Moshe said, Koma Hashem, arise, O God, v'yofu tzor yevecha, and let your enemies be dispersed, v'yonusu misanecho miponecho, and those who hate you shall flee from before you. A journeying aron, a journeying ark, sanctifies by virtue of the fact that it destroys the enemy. What happens if the enemy is not destroyed? What happens if the enemy rises one day and conquers? Then that sanctity which came as a result of conquest no longer exists. The conquest cancels out the previous conquest. How did Ezra sanctify Eretz Yisrael? Not with a moving aron, but uvenucha yomar, in the second pasuk, Moshe Rabbeinu says, uvenucha, when the aron is at rest, then, you know what you need in order to sanctify the land? Shuva Shem Rivavot Alfei Yisrael. Let tens of thousands of Jews return. By virtue of the fact that they return, the ark that is at rest sanctifies Eretz Yisrael. Yehoshua sanctified the land through a journeying ark. Ezra sanctified the land through an ark that was at rest. Because the Rambam says, toward the end of the period of the first Bet HaMikdash, there was a king by the name of Yoshiyahu. Yoshiyahu was concerned that Yerushalayim may fall someday, and he did not want the ark to fall into the hands, God forbid, of any enemy. So the Rambam describes that when Shlomo HaMelech built the Bet HaMikdash, deep below the Temple Mount, he built a hidden chamber, and into that hidden chamber Yoshiyahu lowered the aron there, and that's where it is. So what do we have in Yerushalayim? In Yerushalayim there is an ark that is at rest. You have an ark that's at rest, then all you need is Rivavot Alfei Yisrael, tens of thousands of Jews coming back. That already sanctifies the land. The third pshat was gold. And that was based on a pasuk. That was based on the pasuk in Bechukotai that says that when Jews are going to be cast out of the land because of their sins, V'shamamu aleha ayivechem hayoshvim ba, your enemies who live in the land will be desolate. Rashi, the Ramban, explain that here in the middle of the Tochacha, in the middle of the bad news, there is also good news. Zu besora toba, this is good news for the Jewish people. What is the good news over here? That no enemy will ever be able to settle the land. Shamamu aleha ayivechem, your enemies, hayoshvimba, who live in the land, will be desolate. They won't be able to strike roots in the land. The land will never respond to them. So I said, therefore, conquest of Nebuchadnezzar can cancel out the conquest of Yehoshua. What's going to cancel out, or what could have the power to cancel the settlement of Ezra? If some other people are able to settle it, but since no other people will ever be able to settle the land, there is no settlement that can unsettle the settlement of Ezra. That Ezra settled. And for us that was never enough. We never settled for that either. Alright, now do we have all of the meanings of the word settlement? It's settled. Okay. One other idea that we expressed, and that was the great statement of the Vilna Gaon over 200 years ago. The first sanctity of Eretz Yisrael was done through Yehoshua. The second was Ezra and Nehemiah. The gematria, the numerical value of Yehoshua, is 391, the numerical value of Ezra and Nehemiah equals 391. Says the Vilna Gaon, the third entry of Jews into Eretz Yisrael is going to be in the same way as Yahushua entered the land, and in the same way as Ezra and Nehemiah entered the land. The third entry of Jews into Eretz Yisrael is going to be through conquest and settlement. And he was absolutely right. There is one other respect in which the return of Jews to Eretz Yisrael for the third time is going to be similar to the second. And that's really what all of Ezra and Nehemiah are about. The return from the Babylonian exile is with the permission granted by the king of Persia. Permission is going to be granted in three separate edicts by three separate kings of Persia. The first chapter of Ezra is the great pronouncement of Koresh, king of Persia, who says, Jews may go back to Eretz Yisrael. Whoever wants to go, go. Permission is granted. We're going to hear the same thing from Artaxasta, whom we're going to learn about later, and we're going to hear the same thing from Doryovesh Darius. The Ramban already says it, and many others say it, that when Jews will return for the third time, it will also be with permission granted by the nations of the world. Let me ask you, somebody buys an apartment and pays for the apartment in full. Can they turn around and say, no, I want ice deal, no deal? No deal, no such thing. The moment we take possession of it, you can't be Indian givers. No such thing. There's no such thing as rescinding their permission. You know, I'll tell you why. Because the Rabbeinu Shalom gives them permission to give permission, but this doesn't give them permission to take away permission. Because they're acting as instruments of HaKadosh Baruch. The permission granted by Koresh, which is the beginning of Sefer Ezra, represents also the idea that permission, as was granted in our time, and I believe I sort of threw in at the end of this year that in Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah we're going to learn about three separate and distinct edicts where permission is granted. So if I want to be a real Zionist, I can say that that may very well correspond to the Balfour Declaration, the League of Nations, and the United Nations. Also, three times the permission is granted. The granting of permission is a terribly, terribly important ingredient in the Aliyah of Ezra and Nehemiah, and it's terribly important in our own day. In what way was it important in the days of Ezra? Because Yirmiyahu had said that you're going to go to Bavel and you're going to remain there ad yom pogdi eschem, until the day that I remember you. I always get worried that I may not be quoting the pasuk correctly. I believe it should be in chapter 28 or 29. 29, Bavel yuvo, the Shamayiyu, they shall come to Bavel. He says like this. Chapter 29. First of all, two things. Yirmiyahu says, you're going to Bavel, build houses there, marry, have children, settle in, because and seek the peace of that city and pray for the place, because you're going to remain there. You're going to remain there until I will remember you. Ad yom pokdi eschem. So of course I'm looking precisely for those words, and of course I'll get aggravated until I find. Ki ko amar Hashem. So says God. Ki lefi melos lebavel shivim shana. When 7 years end for Bavel, efkod etchem. I will remember you. I think the last thing we were saying at the end of the shir is that this word pokod has many meanings. It's a code, but I don't like codes. F code, I will remember. What is it that Koresh says in his opening statement? Pasuk 2. Koamar Koresh Melech Paras. So says Koresh, king of Paras. Kol mamlechot haaretz, all of the kingdoms of the land, Natan li Hashem elokei hashamayim, God, the God of heaven, gave to me. V'hu pokad olai, and he commanded or appointed me, livnot lo bayit b'Yerushalayim asher b'Yehuda, to build for him a house in Yerushalayim, which is in Yehuda. That is the pekida. A pekida, God remembers. There's a sign, a simon min hashamayim. A simon min hashamayim is terribly, terribly important. And I'll tell you why. Because the Gemara says in Masechet Ketubot that there were three oaths that God administered. Two to the people of Israel and one to the nations of the world. The two oaths that were administered to the Jewish people, one, Shelo yimdedu pu'umos, that whatever nation we live in, we should not rebel against that people. We have to be good citizens wherever we live, and we usually were precisely that, very good citizens. I have a feeling sometimes we were too good. The second oath that was administered was, and this is the most important, Shelo yalu bechoma, which means that Jews shall not go up like a wall of people en masse. We're not allowed to go up to Eretz Israel en masse. The position taken by those who were opposed to the establishment of the State of Israel in the religious world was because of this oath, Shelo yalu bechoma. You're not allowed to go up en masse. Can't do that. There was a third oath, and this third oath was administered to the nations of the world. And that third oath was, Shelo yishtabdu b'Yisrael yoter midai. They should not enslave the Jews more than is necessary. In other words, the Jews are going to be second-class citizens, okay. But the pogroms and a Shoah, that's not part of the God's arrangement with the nations of the world. It was the Avnei Nezer and many others, Gedolim of the end of the last century and the beginning of this century, who said the following. That yes, we don't have a right to go up en masse to Eretz Israel to settle the land. We don't have a right to fight for Eretz Israel unless there is a siman min hashamayim, unless there is a pekida that God has remembered us. What is the indication that God has remembered us? So then it's the Meshech Chokhmah and others who say the very fact that nations of the world granted permission, that removes the fear of the oaths. Because the whole fear of the oaths is that we go up en masse against the will of the world. But if we're granted permission, then it's not against the will of the world. Then we are allowed to go up and conquer Eretz Israel. Of course, there are those also who say, and there are many answers that are given to this question, how can Jews come up en masse to Eretz Israel? There's an oath. And when the Gemara says an oath, what it really means is there was no official gathering at which God told everybody, lift your right hands and say that you accept the oath. What it really means is that Chachmei Yisrael, the wise men of Israel, understood that, number one, for Jews to survive in a long exile, they're going to have to be good citizens. Don't rebel against the nations of the world. Mind your own business. Second, they knew that taking Eretz Yisrael by force would never succeed. It would be a disaster unless there's some sign from heaven, and that sign from heaven would be permission granted by the nations of the world. Good advice. So number one, the permission granted is that which gives us the permission to return en masse to Eretz Yisrael. Second, and I say I'm not going to go through all of the answers here. Second, of course, is the idea that the oath that was administered, so to speak, in a manner of speaking, to the nations of the world was the condition. Under what circumstances don't we have the right to rebel against the nations of the world? Under what circumstances do we not have a right to go up en masse against, to conquer Eretz Yisrael, if the nations of the world doesn't let them? If they give us, if we can live there, but what happens if the nations of the world make it impossible for us to live, and they've broken their part of the oath, they didn't keep their part of the bargain, then we become freed from our part of the bargain. Therefore, of course, after the Shoah, there is already no question at all that the nations of the world did not keep their part of the bargain. They either actively attempted to destroy the Jewish people, or passively sat by and watched and did nothing. So therefore we become freed of our restraint. Shelo yalu b'choma, that they shall not go up en masse. We're freed of that, and therefore we can come. Speaking about la'alot b'choma, the Gemara says in two places that the great tragedy, the tragedy of the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, was that, or the tragedy really of the entire period of the second Beit HaMikdash, is that Jews did not come up en masse. The Gemara in Bracha says, Ilmale, would Israel have come up en masse in the days of Ezra as they did in the days of Yahushua, God would have done for them miracles as he did in the days of Yahushua. But they didn't. And because they didn't, it was an opportunity, a great opportunity that was missed. They missed the opportunity, and for all intents and purposes, what it really means is that they condemned themselves to another Churban and another exile. But would we have come up en masse? Would Jews have listened to Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, Mordechai, Ezra, Nehemiah, Zerubbabel? You know what? If they would have listened to the Goy, Koresh, Melech Paras, Koresh, King of Paras, we would have saved ourselves a tremendous amount of agony, 2,000 years worth of it. Would we have come up, huh? Except, of course, yes, it's true today too, except, of course, that we have come up more en masse in our time than in the times of Ezra and Nehemiah. A number of times I discussed the idea that during the peak period of Jewish population in Eretz Yisrael, during the Second Commonwealth, during the Second Beit HaMikdash, we never made it to more than 2 million Jews or so. The maximum could have been 2,350,000. We're already double that now, and double that not in a period of 600 years, which was the Second Beit HaMikdash, but in a period of 50 years or 100 years, we have. There's no comparison. You can't compare. There were 7 million Jews in the world then. Yes, I'm sorry. We're trying to keep this shear clean. No. Yeah, all right. No. I'm only here to explain our position. I'm not. All right. I'm very calm, and I'm not starting up with anybody. I don't have any kayak to yell at anybody. Who was it? You said I should go home and take a Valium, right? You were right. No, she said, she told my wife, take him home, give him Valium. You know, I was getting real excited last week, 2 weeks ago this year. On that same Valium, yeah, it's keeping me going. You were right. I was so excited. Yes. Very good. It can be amassing. It does not have to mean that the Jews are going to come in all of us together all at once. You see, because the fact is that it has to be a process of amassing. Because what was Ezra? Ezra, the Rambam said, was hitnachalut, settlement. So you need those who are going to go ahead and lay the foundations. They're going to be four aliyot that we're going to discuss, and each one added something else to the to establishing the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael. Yes. You're right. The Gemara asks that question. How do you like that? She asked. But Ezra was not part of the first wave. Truth is, I don't know if we can call the first, I wouldn't call the first group a wave. We'd call it a trickle. The ones who came with Zerubbabel, 12,000 Jews came with Zerubbabel, with Ezra, and we're going to read about that now, 30,000 came with Ezra. The Gemara says that as long as Ezra's Rebbe, who was Baruch ben Neriya, was alive, he would not leave him. When his Rebbe died, he went on Aliyah. Baruch ben Neriya was the Talmid Muvak. He was the student of Yirmiyahu. He was the one that wrote the prophecies of Yirmiyahu. Baruch ben Neriya, he brought it to Babel, yes. As long as his Rebbe was alive, he could not leave him. Yes. What we want that we should get is a picture of what does it look like? Here are Ezra and Nehemiah who are coming on Aliyah with permission granted, and the prophets say that they should go, and Jews are going to have an extremely difficult time settling into the land. Okay, let's read. I think I'm going to be reading the beginning of Ezra again already. Some Britain mull for the third time, but it's okay. Let's go. Because in Yitz Hashem, from here on in, I think that we're going to have pretty, all being well, gesundheit, we'll have normal weeks of study. All right. So let's start all over again. Ubishnas Achas, first year of Korash Melech Paras. In the first year of Korash, king of Paras, Lichlo Tavar Hashem Yipiri Yirmiyah, when the end came to the words of God through the mouth of Yirmiyah. And that we talked about in the first year, that there was a great deal of confusion when the 70 years begin, when the 70 years end. There were a number of different beginnings, different 70 years. Even Daniel himself, we read in chapter 9 in Daniel, that Daniel says, Vinoti Basforum, I studied the Sforum, and I wanted to figure out when did the 70 years begin, so that I would know when the 70 years end. But now we're already one of the periods of the 70 years are coming to an end. God awakened and aroused the spirit of Koresh, king of Paras, and he sent a message out through his entire kingdom, a message, a verbal message, and he also sent it in writing, so saying. This is the famous Edict 1. Now, in chapter 6, we're going to have the second part of this edict. We get part one here. Kol amar Koresh melech Paras, so says Koresh, king of Paras. Kol mamlechot haaretz, all the kingdoms of the land, natan li Hashem, God gave to me, Elokei Hashamayim, the God of the heavens. We only began to point out the idea that though Koresh is the instrument of God, though Koresh quotes God, Yud Kei Vav Kei, Koresh remains his entire life and idol worship. So therefore, at best, he's ready to say that God is Elokei Hashamayim, God of the heavens. He will not refer to him as Elokei Haaretz, God of the earth. He will not refer to him as Elokei Yisrael, the God of Israel. When Yeshayahu, 150, 200 years earlier, had prophesied that there would be a man by the name of Koresh, he described a person who was going to be sent by Elokei Yisrael. He's going to be the instrument of Elokei Yisrael, the God of Israel. But Koresh himself never recognizes the God of Israel. V'hu pakad alai. He commanded Livnot lo bayit b'Yerushalayim Hashem Yehuda to build for him a house in Yerushalayim, which is in Yehuda. Now, what is very interesting in this first edict, what's very interesting over here is no talk and no mention of building the city of Yerushalayim. There is no discussion here whatsoever. Nothing will be mentioned of borders. By the way, borders will never be mentioned in any of the edicts that give Jews permission to go up. Borders are never clearly defined. And this, of course, was for political reasons. For political and military and other reasons, they did not want to... Borders are never defined. Because for all intents and purposes... I mean, the real truth, and I'm not using these words simply because they're in vogue, but this is precisely what's happening. The king of Persia is going to give Jews autonomy in Eretz Israel, but nothing more. Nothing beyond autonomy. There is no such thing as sovereignty. The moment that they begin to mention borders, that means you are telling them that within these borders, there are no borders. Borders would mean sovereignty. There is no sovereignty. Jews are not going to become sovereign in Eretz Israel for another 150 years. They're going to be a vassal state, first of the Persian Empire, then later on of the Greek Empire. Then, of course, Hanukkah, the story of Hanukkah, the rebellion of the Maccabees, Matthew and Yehuda HaMaccabee, and even from the time of that rebellion, it will take 25 years until they will establish a Jewish kingdom and sovereignty in Eretz Israel. That's going to come much later. By the way, I would say most probably that certainly we achieved sovereignty much quicker in our time than they achieved sovereignty then. We achieved borders. I don't know anymore what they are. Today nobody knows what they are. But we achieved that a great deal earlier than they did in the time of Ezra. And I'm going to be making these comparisons so that we should be able to see our present day in a historic and in a Tanakh perspective. That's really the purpose of learning this all. Aside from the fact that it's Torah. The only permission that's granted is to build God's house in Yerushalayim. That's all. Now, if God does have any place on the face of this earth, it's in Yerushalayim, and his influence is limited to there. The Persian kings permitted freedom of religion in all of the countries of their empire. As long as you remained loyal to Persia, you can serve whatever God you want. Not only that, we're going to see something, I think, very important today. He's going to say that the Jews throughout the world, and not only Jews throughout the world, anybody who wants to donate money to the Beit HaMikdash, or anybody who wants to assist the people in going on Aliyah, is permitted to do so. In other words, it meant that I don't know whether you want to call it a tax exemption, or this was a clear write-off that you were permitted to do. It was not simple to move monies from one country to the next, and here Koresh is going to permit it. They say that the kings of Persia were benevolent despots. And as long as a people remained docile, so to speak, they could go about whatever they wanted to do, because since he was an idolater, he was a real pluralist. I mean, you have your idol. I have my idol. Everybody can have all their idols. Go right ahead. That's what he is. And therefore, they permitted... not only they permitted... as he's going to say over here, that they can take the vessels of the Beit HaMikdash back to Yerushalayim, so too the idols of other peoples were permitted back to their temples in whatever land they were. Bavel's policy was scorched earth, destroy utterly. Destroy a people, their culture, their religion, in every shape and form. Persia was precisely the opposite. All right. Mi bachem mikolamo. Who is it from any of his people? Anybody who wants to go, Yehiel, Kofimo, let God be with him. V'yal Yerushalayim Hashem Yehuda, let him go to Yerushalayim that is in Yehuda. V'yivin et Beit Hashem, again says, build the house of God, Elokei Yisrael, in Yerushalayim. And here he calls him Elokei Yisrael, but he limits this Elokei Yisrael by saying, who? V'alokim Hashem Yerushalayim. He will call him Elokei Yisrael, but he still has not called him Elokei Ha'aretz. Every deity had its limits, its geographic limitations. That's it. Its sphere of influence, right? The Chol Anisha, and whoever remains, anybody who's not going on Aliyah, Mikol HaMikomot Asher Hu Garsha, from any of the places where you live, you know what your responsibility is to do? Here he's establishing, for the first time, he's establishing the UJA. And he says, anybody who remains, what you should do is give gold and silver and provisions to those who are going on Aliyah. Let the people of his place laden him or fill him or raise him, uplift him, exalt him, with silver and gold and possessions and animals. He also permits a Jew living in Babel to send sacrifices to Yerushalayim or to donate money to Yerushalayim. And he's not going to ask questions about whether the money is going this side of the green line or that side of the green line. You can send money to Yerushalayim. I mean, this really was for a man who straddled a world as a conqueror and an emperor. They were very, very enlightened. Very enlightened. By Yokumu Rashi Havos, the Yehuda Binyamin, the heads of the families of Yehuda and Binyamin arose, Vahakohanim, Vahalevim, Kohanim and Levim, Lechol Heihir Elokim et Rucho, everybody who God aroused his spirit, those who were aroused by the great clarion call of Korash, La'alot Livnot, to go up and build at Beit Hashem Hashem Yerushalayim, the house of God that is in Yerushalayim. V'chol sviotein chizkiu b'yadeim, all the people in their neighborhood or around them strengthen their hands. V'chlei chesef, b'zohav, b'rechush, u'b'behema, u'b'migdanot, not only silver and gold and possessions and animals, migdanot, all sorts of desirable objects. Wealth was given to them with which to build the Beit HaMikdash. Levad al kola hitnadev, in addition to that, with anything else that people wished to donate, they gave to those who went on Aliyah. King Koresh is the one who took out the vessels of the house of God, asher hotzin Nebuchadnezzar and Yerushalayim, that Nebuchadnezzar had taken from Yerushalayim, by his name the Beit Elohav, and he put it in the house of his God. He took them out. By Yotzien Koresh, Melech Paras, Koresh, King of Paras, took them out. Al Yad Mitridat HaGizbar, through the good offices of his treasurer, whose call his name is Mitridat. You're going to have to get used to a lot of Babylonian names. For that matter, even most of the Jews that we're going to list are going to have Babylonian names. They're not going to sound so Jewish to us. It was clearly the result, of course, of the fact that 70 years in Bavel, yes,
like we all
had an impact, like we all had English names, right? Vayispedem, he counted them, L'Sheish Batzar, Hanasi L'Yuda. Sheish Batzar is a name that you haven't heard before. The fact is that Sheish Batzar is the one who leads. He is the prince of Judah, and he is the one who leads the very first group of Olim. He is called the prince of Yehuda because he was the real royalty is heading this, But the real royalty does not have the power of royalty. There is no royal house, and as we say, there won't be a royal house until 25 or 30 years into the rebellion of the Hashmonaim. Ve'elam Misperam, and these are the numbers of the Kalim, the objects, the vessels. Agar Talei Zahav Shloshim. I think we use the word Agar Tal today as a vase, but what they were really were kinds of vases in which they received the blood of a sacrifice that was later to be sprinkled upon the altar. Agar Talei Kesef Olaf, 1,000 vases of silver. Machalafim. You know what a chalaf is? A sheichet's knife. A knife. Machlafim tish ove esrim 29. Kforei zahav is also another kind of a vessel in which to receive the blood of a sacrifice. 30. Kforei kesef mishnim. Kforei kesef of silver that were secondary in value to the others. Arba meot v'asara, 410. Kelim achedim olef, a variety, a miscellaneous of a variety of other kelim, 1,000. Now you have to remember, everything over here is counted so carefully for a number of reasons. Number one, because this is the great precious treasure of the Beit HaMikdash. Every dish, every gupel, every lefel is holy. This is the Beit HaMikdash. And in a sense, I would say that it is part of the accounting. Ezra, in fact, is saying, you know, so much received, and on the other end, this is exactly what we are going to be giving to the Beit HaMikdash. Isn't that what Moshe Rabbeinu did? Parashat Pekudei, he wanted to be clean before the eyes of Israel, counted out every last shekel that was donated to the Mishkan, what in fact happened to it all. Kol kelim lazor b'lakesef, all the kelim of gold and silver, chameshet alafim v'arba meot, altogether 5,400. Hakol, everything, he'elos sheish batzar brought it up, im he'alot hakola, when the gola went up, mi'bavel Yerushalayim, from Babel to Yerushalayim. So here, remember sheish batzar. That's not a name that most people will know from Tanakh. Zerubbabel, they hear about from time to time. Ezra and Nehemiah, of course, but not Sheish Batzar. Yes?
You said the son of a king. Never said also
first of all, Zerubbabel was also from the family of the king of Yehuda. Some say Sheish Batzar is Zerubbabel. Some say that Sheish Batzar is a person separate and distinct from Zerubbabel. We did it. It took us 3 shiurim, but we have finished chapter 1. Just want you to remember that. We finished chapter 1. Now the fact is that chapter 2, I did say that we're going to read chapter 2 in clay. I'm not reading it today. It's all, but I just want to take a few psukim. The first few psukim and the last few psukim. One is there's something important that I want to point out. Ve'ele b'nei ha-medina. These are the people of the Medina. Do you know what the word Medina here means? Jews who had lived in Eretz Yisrael. The Medina. This is the first time it's called a Medina. Ela b'nei ha-Medina. Ha'olim mishvi ha-gola, who went up from the captivity of the exile. Asher heglon Nebuchadnezzar melech Babel u'Babel. That Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babel, had exiled to Babel. Vayoshuvu l'Yerushalayim. They returned to Yerushalayim. To Yehuda and to Yehuda, ish li'ido, each man to his city. But you see, it's clear, they all came to Yerushalayim first. And from Yerushalayim, they spread out later, ish li'ido, each one to his city. Asher bo im Zerubbabel, those who came with Zerubbabel. Now, according to the Perush here, Sheish Batzar was in the days of Koresh. Zerubbabel is going to be the leader of the next wave of Aliyah, which is in the days of Daryavesh. By the time I'm finished with you, don't get so nervous now to try and figure out who's Koresh, who's Daryavesh, who's Artaxasta, who's going to be Achashverosh, when did they live, who came first, who came second. Don't get nervous. I'll make it all clear to you, but at this point you don't yet have to. No, I don't want you, I don't want to confuse you at this point. You're confused enough. That came with Zerubbabel. Who are the ones that came with Zerubbabel? Yeshua. Yeshua is going to be important. He's going to appear a number of times. Yeshua is really Yehoshua ben Yehotzadok. He is the Kohen Gadol. In Haggai, we're going to hear about Zerubbabel, and in Malachi, we're going to hear about Zerubbabel with Yeshua, Nehemiah, Seroya, Re'eloya, Mordechai. Now, there is a difference of opinion whether this is the Mordechai we know or it's another Mordechai. There is even an opinion that says Ezra was Mordechai. The only thing that I want to point out is I had once talked about what a great Ohev Eretz Yisrael Mordechai was, and somebody came over to me and, what do you mean, buddy? He stayed in Persia. He didn't stay in Persia. After Mordechai finished what had to be done, he went on Aliyah. I'm telling you, trust me, Mordechai went on Aliyah. Bilshan, Mispar, Bigvai. These are names. Rechum, Bana, Mispar, Anshei Am Yisrael. They came with the number of people from Am Yisrael, and then begins from Pasuk Gimel on and further, we have the list of all of the families and precisely how many people came from each one of the families. The total of people that came in the first few waves of Aliyah, all of them together, if you want to write it down, if you want to know, I was going to say the trivia of Tanakh. God forbid, what a terrible thing. There is no trivia in Tanakh. Everything is Kodesh. 49,897 people came. And you know what else we're going to find out in this parak? Should I repeat that number? 49,897 people in the first few waves of Aliyah. Sheshbatzar, Zerubbabel, Ezra, Nehemiah. And 8,136 animals. 8,000, they're going to be listed. Do you understand? Any animal that was used in coming on Aliyah was a holy animal. What it also means is the animals were for the elderly who couldn't walk. Do you know what the rest of the Olim did? 40,000 of them? They walked all the way from Bavel to Yerushalayim. All right. They walked. I'm ashamed of myself. 3 hours into an LL flight, I'm already complaining. It's crowded. It's this. It's that. It's hot. There's too much talking. I didn't like the chicken. I complained about everything. None of the movies are worthwhile seeing. Garnished. Shandan Achav, you know, a 10, 11-hour flight, and we can't... Truth is, it's pretty rough. But they walked all the way from Bavel to Yerushalayim. Well, just count the distance of a scud. How far did the scuds have to go? Huh? What's the...
1,000 kilometers,
yeah. You know, it's going to be fascinating. Ezra is going to leave Bavel 2 days before Pesach. And he's going to arrive in Eretz Yisrael on Rosh Chodesh Av. Nehemiah also is going to arrive on Rosh Chodesh Av. And there's something very symbolic about it. He starts out marching with his people, and it's during Pesach that they cross the Euphrates. Do you know what he was reenacting? Yetziat Mitzrayim. Otherwise, how are you going to get people Erev Pesach, you understand? You have to bake matzahs, you have to clean the house. Erev Pesach, that's a time to start out on a journey. No, Ezra left 2 days before Pesach. And during Pesach, they crossed the Euphrates. And he wanted to arrive in Eretz Yisrael on Rosh Chodesh Av, so that that month that had been a month of tragedy and disaster should now be turned into a month of great joy for the Jewish people. We were exiled in Av, but we returned in Av. And Nehemiah did the same thing. So we now have Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, 4 months, or 3.5 months. Now, in this, we may come back to this, but in this chapter, let's go toward the end of the chapter. You know where I want you to go? I want you to go to Pasuk 58. Nun Chet, 58. And you'll see exactly why, because this is going to set the stage for a number of other things. Up until now, he has listed every family that went on Aliyah, the number of people in the family, in some cases, where they had once lived in Eretz Yisrael, in some cases, he says, where they came from in Bavel. There were Kohanim, there were Levim, there were Yisraelim, all were represented. Later on, we're going to see a problem, that Ezra has a problem, that when he's coming, there are not many Levim who are ready to go. That will be a separate topic. 50 et nun chet, kol hanesinim, ubnei avdei shlomo shlosh meyot tishim ushnayim. Who are the Nesinim? The Nesinim, that was a chapter in Yahushua. There was a city by the name of Givon that tricked, deceived Yahushua into making a covenant. And when they found out that it was an act of deceit, that the covenant was really false. So what's fascinating is Yahushua and Klal Yisrael would not break the covenant. A deal is a deal. It would have been Chilul HaShem. Just parenthetically, I read an article yesterday in one of in a right wing magazine, where somebody writes that, listen, Yahushua honored an agreement that was the result of deceit. And therefore he says we have a responsibility to honor Oslo 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And I don't understand, great Talmud Chacham, and he doesn't realize that honoring that agreement did not endanger Klal Yisrael. So a few people, we didn't kill a few people. And here we're talking about an agreement that may very well endanger the safety and the security of Klal Yisrael. How can you make a comparison to this? And I read it yesterday, and he describes the whole story with the Givonim. Why were they called Netinim? Because it says, Vayitnim Yahushua. Yahushua made them into the wood choppers and the water fetchers. Vayitnim, he gave them, or he made them, he appointed them. So they were for all time called the Nesinim. They also came back. And the sons of the slaves of Shlomo, in other words, they had become part of Klal Yisrael, but they were sort of, in a sense, strangers. 392. When it says 392, you can be sure there weren't 393 and there weren't 391. And it was important to list even these people to show that, you know, they've gone on Aliyah. The Eilech Olim Mitel Melech, and these are the ones who went up from Tel Melech, is a place in Bavel, and Tel Charsha, Kruv, Adan, Imer. People, those were the people who came up from those places. V'lo yochlu lahagid beit avotam v'zaram. They were not able to tell or prove from what father's house they came or from whom they were children. In the Yisrael heim, whether they were Jews. In other words, if anybody gets all excited about the fact that there are people coming on Aliyah, that, well, Russian Jews, we don't know, Ethiopians, here Jewish, Nish Jewish, In Jewish, here Jewish, and there are serious doubts. It started with the Jews of India, the Jews of Cochin, and other things. So, you know, there are those who look at it this, you know, that's the Zionist state, you understand, every chaleria they bring in over here. So I want you to know that this is exactly how it happened in the days of Ezra.
It's a repeat of what's happening. And you know what you have to do? You have to face the problems. You have to deal with them. And you have to deal with them compassionately. And the Pasuk mentions that they came up. And for all time we know that they came up. Because the fact that they're ready to come is terribly, terribly important and significant. While there may be a few million Jews that remained in Babel and didn't want to come on Aliyah. But these Nesinim came. And these people whom we weren't even sure whether they were Jewish, they came. B'nei Deloya, B'nei Tovia, B'nei Nekoda, Sheish Meot Chamishim Ushnaim, 652 people that we weren't sure. Now 652 people out of a group of 40 or so thousand, that's a significant number. And they came. Umi B'nei HaKohanim, B'nei Chavaya, B'nei HaKotz, B'nei Barzilai, Asher Lokach Mim, those Barzilai HaGalodi Isha, Vayikore Al Shemam, there were those who had married into the family of Barzilai HaGiladi. Barzilai HaGiladi was one of the staunch supporters of David at the lowest moment in David's life, when David is being pursued by his son Avshalom. Eile Bikshu Ksovam HaMesiach Simvolonim Tzo, they sought documents that say what their Yichus is, and they couldn't find it. They were from the families of Kohanim, but they were not able to prove that they were Kohanim. Does it mean that they had to come before the Rabbanut? Yes. Misrat HaPnim, somebody had to decide. And Ezra made the decision that since they were not able to prove that they were really Kohanim, Vayigo Alu Min HaKohuna, they were removed. They were not permitted to serve as Kohanim. It means that all of the problems that we have today, and many more, the Mishnah at the end of the Masechta Kedushin says, Asoro Yuchsin Olu Mi Bavel L'Eretz Yisrael. The Mishnah, there were 10 types of people that came from Bavel, went up from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, 3. And then comes 7, a list of 7. Mamzeri, Nesini, Geruri, Shtuki, Asufi. I don't have to describe them all, but what they are really, an Asufi is a child found in the street. Don't know who the father or mother is. Of questionable genealogy. The Gemara even says that Ezra, just hang in, there was an ethnic cleansing of Bavel. Whoever remained in Bavel, you knew was a kosher yid. All the dredges of society are the ones who went on Aliyah. It was like joining the Foreign Legion. And they were the ones who built the Second Commonwealth. They're the ones. Because the Rabbeinu Shalom uses as his messengers those people who are ready and who are available. You're the ones that came on Aliyah? I'm going to build a Jewish commonwealth through you. And a Beis HaMikdash is going to be built through you. Don't tell me that the Rabbeinu Shalom is going to wait around until Shaini Yidden are going to appear on the horizon. Whoever is coming, you're here, you'll build the Beis HaMikdash. That's what's terribly important about this. Vayoma HaTir Shosa Lehem. HaTir Shosa said to him, Hatir Shosa means his excellency or his holiness, and it could very well have been Zerubbabel who said, Ashalo yoklu mi kodesh hakodashim. They cannot eat from the sacrifices that are kodesh, adamot kohen l'urim ulatumim, until the day will come that we will have a kohen with a breastplate. What he really means to say is, until Mashiach comes, we're not going to know whether you people are real kohanim. Kol HaKol Ke'echot, the entire community has won. Arba Ribo, in this wave there were Arba Ribo, a Ribo is 10,000, Arba Ribo is 40,000, Alpayim, 42,000, Shlosh Me'ot Ushishim, 42,360 in this particular wave of Aliyah, but there have been previous ones. Milvad Avdeim, aside from their servants, the Amoseim and their maidservants, Eila, Shiva Salofim, Shlosh Meos, Shloshim Vishiva, 7,337. Ulahem, Mishodidim, Og Matayim, and they had singers, 200. Suseyan. Now do you understand? Every Heliger horse
that went on Aliyah is mentioned for all time in Tanakh. It's Kodesh. It's Mamish Kodesh. So saying 736. It's awesome. I'm telling you, this is awesome. 736 horses, Pirdehem, donkeys or mules, 245, Gemalayim camels, 435, donkeys, 6,720. By the way, you may get a test one of these days. And from the heads of the families, when they came to the house of God in Yerushalayim, they donated to the house of God. They went, set out immediately to establish the Beth HaMikdash on its foundations. Each one according to his ability, they gave to the fund for the work. Zohav, now they give the donations. Dar Kimonim, Shei Shidi Vot Va'elef. 60,000 and 1,000 dar kamon was a certain kind of coin. Kesef manim, chamesh alafim, katnot kohanim, they brought garments to the kohanim, 100. Vayeshua kohanim v'alevim, umin ha'am, v'hameshoredim. Meshoredim means the ones who used to sing in the Beis HaMikdash. V'hashoredim, you know, these people, by the way, these people had to be well over 70. They had to be in their... their 90s most probably, and that's who the
it had to be over
20 to begin. So we're talking about people who were elderly, and they were the ones who didn't walk. They're the ones who rode on the camels. Vashoarim were the gatekeepers of the Beis HaMikdash. Vanitinim and the Nesinim, as we explained, in their cities. V'chol Yisrael v'orem, and all of Israel in their cities. Chapter 2 lists for us the holy horses, the holy people, even the unholy people who became holy by virtue of the fact that they came on Aliyah. Each one is mentioned by family name, and that there were problems in terms of we didn't really know whether everybody was really Jewish, we didn't know whether everybody was really a Kohen, and were there, in a sense, what we might consider undesirables who came? And they built the second Beit HaMikdash. That's good.